1 year ago, the stock market seemed to crash for a sickening moment. A year later, it's quite a different story. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. On August 24th, 2015, here we stood watching the Dow fall more than 1,100 points in early trading. It recovered, but concerns about China got the blame that day. Later, it emerged that market systems set up to quell volatility had the opposite effect in ways that caused particularly exchange-traded funds, ETFs, to wobble in unexpected ways. Right now, though, the stock market is not volatile. Susan Schmidt is Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Morning, Susan.
Good morning.
We don't just have to talk about volatility. There's an index, right? The VIX?
Yes, we have an index for that. So the VIX index, that's V-I-X, and that measures the volatility in the stock market. And it's actually been quite interesting this summer. The VIX came into the summer almost double the rate of what it is right now. So we've seen a big decline in volatility over the summer, and I don't think that we should expect that to continue.
But explain this to me. I mean, the stock market has been edging up each day, a little bit here and there, no big deal. Why are you worried about that?
That's the nature of investors, is that they tend to get concerned when there's no news to grab onto. Right now, the concern is that it's really quiet, and yet the market is still inching its way upward. And so when that happens with no fundamental change underneath, investors start to get nervous just because they're constantly questioning the direction and what's moving it.
Yeah, well, this just in, Susan, right? Someday the market will go down. I mean, that's a concern that you always have to have because it's always true.
That is always true, and it will reverse. And exogenous shocks can be that trigger point. So you just mentioned the anniversary. A year ago, the market was doing all right. It was concerned about what was going on in China and what was going to happen with the Chinese currency. That really set us into a tailspin in August. And we saw that concern come back in January of this year.
Susan Schmidt, portfolio manager at Westwood Holdings Group. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Some of the world's biggest banks are teaming up to pour some digital grease into the system that can still take days to move money from place to place. There's news that these banks are using the technology that underpins the virtual currency Bitcoin to reduce this friction. UBS, Deutsche Bank, Santander, and BNY Mellon have come up with this digital coin that promotes security but requires no central accounting ledger. Martin Arnold, banking editor for the Financial Times, wrote about this new agreement today among banks. I asked him about the problem that banks are really trying to solve here.
It takes several days to send money, particularly across borders, and the financial markets and the banks and the institutions involved in those financial markets all have huge numbers of people and IT systems tied up in the reconciling and checking and storing of the information around the transfer of money across the financial system. They've come up with this idea that if we could use this blockchain technology that Bitcoin is based on to have digital cash on the blockchain, that would speed everything up. And it would have a central repository of value that institutions could use to quickly pay for assets rather than having things tied up and having lots of different versions of the same data and having to reconcile it.
If this technology works and it saves banks money, that will help banking profits, presumably. Do you think a consumer ever sees the effect of this? Will my check clear more quickly?
One area where consumers may start to see things happen is in storing of identities and secondly in storing of contracts. So once you open a bank account once, you're then on the distributed ledger, you're on a blockchain, and that makes it hopefully much easier as a consumer to open new bank accounts or to switch banks or to open another account or get another product from another bank because you're already on the blockchain and they can all access that information.
That is the banking editor of the Financial Times, Martin Arnold, speaking from London. Mr. Arnold, thank you for this.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
A federal panel has now ruled that graduate students who work as teaching or research assistants can join a labor union, something their counterparts at public universities could do already. Grad students at Columbia University started the ball rolling on this. Joining us from one of our St. Paul studios is Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell, who's been considering some of the wider meanings of this, including the notion of unions giving workers a voice.
It's an absolute key word. It draws off a distinction of the late economist Albert Hirschman, and he talked about exit and voice. And so exit is the classic. You don't like management. You don't like this company. You leave. That's what we do in America. We leave the company. But workers also love having voice. And so if you think back to the 1950s when a third of the private sector workforce was unionized, management and labor would sit down and they think about the rules and who can do what. And even companies that weren't unionized, these negotiations had a big influence. And so as we've gone from over 30% of the private sector workforce unionized to 6-7%, workers have lost more and more voice in the workplace. And what these graduate students are saying, they want more voice in how the place is run.
But if we do take this step back, it is, in fact, hard to argue that this is the trend. Union membership is on the decline.
It's very hard to come up with a scenario that, we're going to see a real return to the private sector union in the United States. But you are starting to see a lot of activity. So in the gig economy, the Uber driver, the Lyft driver being the sort of classic example, you have a lot of lawsuits about trying to get more worker protections that right now don't exist for a lot of gig economy workers. You have workers in the fast food industry, which is, high turnover industry, low wage industry, asking for more of a voice. It's a healthy development, but boy, we have a long way to go. Here's just one number to leave you with. Government Accountability Office estimates that 40% of the American workforce now is contingent. That's freelancers, gig economy workers, contract labor. So it's going to be a long way for these workers to have a voice in the workplace.
Marketplace's senior economics contributor, Chris Farrell, thank you for this.
Thanks a lot, David.
A technology CEO who fled criminal charges in a backdating of stock case is set to show up at a Brooklyn, New York court today and plead guilty. Kobe Alexander was CEO of Comverse Technology. For about a decade, he's been living in Namibia. That's to the left of Botswana. Back in 2006, the Wall Street Journal went over the stock granting patterns at Comverse and found the timing very improbable unless somebody was manipulating the system. Now, you won't confuse Hewlett-Packard with Apple. HP's share price fell by half last year after the company broke itself into two companies, and the stock price hasn't recovered much. HP is keeping a hold of its line of computers and printers, and with the company reporting its quarterly results today, Gigi Duban has some more context.
In the printing world, there's an old running joke, and if you've ever bought cartridges or toner, you'll get it.
The money is in the ink, and it was more than a joke. It was true.
Glenn O'Donnell, analyst with Forrester Research, says that hasn't changed. Printing made up 17% of net revenue last quarter, according to the company. But HP is also the second biggest PC manufacturer after Lenovo Group.
I don't believe we are in a post-PC era. We are in a PC plus era.
One where people use PCs along with mobile devices. True, but Patrick Moorhead, president of Moore Insights and Strategy, says even as Dell was growing, HP got smaller.
The big idea here has been getting small to get quicker and to be more innovative and nimble.
Last quarter, the company launched its first 3D printing systems. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
A retiree asked me the other day how 3D printing works. I thought about it and then said it's like building things using one of those pastry bags that bakers use, only it's not buttery icing that comes out. It's usually plastic, which hardens when it cools. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.